That was a very important principle today, and our whole society, all our homes violate this principle. Let's see if I can really explain it in a way, and it's not that easy. At least I'm not finding that easy to articulate exactly. I mean, what we're doing wrong, I know, but why it's wrong, I'm going to try and explain. The Mishnah says like this: Ben Hei Hei Omer Lefum Tzara Agra. According to the amount of effort a person puts into things, that's the amount of his reward. The reward of the mitzvahs depends on the amount of effort a person puts in, the amount of strain, the amount of effort and money, personal effort. That's the amount of reward a person gets for a mitzvah. There's a number of actually problems with that. And the Mishnah here has laid out a very definitive statement of how you know reward. More effort is more reward. That seems to be contradictory to a Mishnah in the second chapter. In the second chapter, the Mishnah says like this. Rebbe says, Havizor b'mitzvah kala kivachamur. A person should be very careful to do all mitzvahs. Mitzvahs that seem to be more important, mitzvahs seem less important. You should do them all equally. Why? This is what Rebbe says. She'ein atol yoidea matan schoren shal mitzvahs. Because we have no way of ascertaining what the relative value of a mitzvah is. And therefore, a mitzvah that to us seems like an unimportant mitzvah, there may be a greater reward. A mitzvah that seems like a very important mitzvah, there may be a lesser reward for. And therefore, we have to do everything with the same amount of zeal, the same amount of commitment. That's what Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi says. So my question is, here the Mishnah tells us a clear rule. What do you mean you don't know the reward of the mitzvahs? The reward of the mitzvahs depend on lefum tzara agra. The more effort, the more difficult, the harder you try, the greater the reward. So how do we reconcile these two mishnayos? Is it we don't know the reward of the mitzvahs? And here we have a rule that clearly establishes that mitzvahs depend on how much effort a person puts in. That's one question. Another interesting question is, we have certain mitzvahs, one of them we had before learning, it says there's a mitzvah, you get reward to be a holchei beis hamedrash, for the effort of walking to study, to go to the study house is also a mitzvah. That we had a few weeks ago, that Mishnah. We actually find a discussion in the Talmud of whether or not walking to a synagogue is a mitzvah. Which means if you live a mile away, you get more reward than if you live across the street. And actually, there's one rabbi says that the pasuk says, the way he reads the pasuk, that it's a blessing, baruch atah bevoecha, if your house is right near the synagogue. And the other rabbi says, no, can't mean that, because if you have to walk, you get more mitzvah. And the Gemara actually tells a story that Rabbi Yochanan, who says that, says he actually learned that from a widow who had a synagogue in her neighborhood, and yet she walked a great distance to a synagogue in a different neighborhood. And therefore, he says, he understood that to him was a tremendous value, the idea making all that effort to do a mitzvah. So first of all, what's difficult to be, first of all, there we have an argument. How could it be an argument? Everybody agrees. Lefum tzara agra. If it is more difficult to do, you get more reward. So how can one person say, no, living across the street is good? And according to the other one, what is he really saying? That by going to synagogue or learning is making an effort, you get more credit for it. That's true by every mitzvah. Why do we set up those two mitzvahs as special cases, that if you make an effort to go to synagogue, you make an effort to go to learn, you get credit. Anything, every mitzvah, lefum tzara agra. Those are the two questions. The last question is like this. The Rambam tells us a very interesting interpretation of this Mishnah. The Fum Sara Agra is referring to the fear and awe that a student feels when he studies. In fact, he says that that's what the Talmud tells us, that Zorok Morla Talmidim, that the student should be in awe of the teacher. And he brings that King Solomon says, Afchach Mosi Amadati, that Afchach, the Torah that I learned when I was afraid of the anger of my teacher, that's what kept me in good stead. Now I say that is totally against any type of modern feeling of what education is, teaching is, and that according to the Talmud, actually it's a Midrashim, but the Rambam says that's the explanation in this Mishnah, that the fact is that in studying it is extreme in teaching and in learning Torah, it's very important that the student actually be sitting there on eggshells, be a little bit afraid, be in awe. Trying to understand why. Modern thinking certainly doesn't agree with that. What about in our homes? We certainly don't have that feeling. You know, certainly in American homes, the parents are buddy-buddy with the with their children. The European way is only awe, and that doesn't seem to be a good way either. What is this? What is really this rule? What does it have to... What's the importance of this? So I was thinking like this. Just the first, I'd like to, so we actually have three questions. The Mishnah says here, it's according to effort, pain, and over there the Mishnah says we don't know the reward of the mitzvahs. Here the Mishnah says every effort is a reward, and then we find by Torah and by davening we find that, and even there we find an argument. And here the Mishnah says by everything is that. If you have to walk a mile, not for a camel, but pick up matzahs, it's the same thing. Right? Lefum sar, you have to walk an hour, or you have to wait an hour in line before Pesach to pick up something, or Erev Shabbos, you have to travel or wait. That's all effort. And mitzvahs go according to effort. So what is this discussion? Is it better to walk to shul? It's not better to walk to... What's the argument? This sounds like a very clear thing. And the third issue was the Rambam tells us that this has to do with the way you teach. There should be some type of... The child should try and inspire some kind of awe and trepidation in the student. I was thinking like this. When we talk about reward for a mitzvah, we're actually talking about two separate things. One of them is the action itself. A mitzvah is a positive action that does good, that has an accomplishment, that provides a reward. On that, the rule is we do not know, we do not begin to know. That's the Mishnah in the second chapter. Which mitzvahs provide a great deal of reward? Which mitzvahs provide a small degree of reward? And I'll give you just a way that can be understand. What do you think a person gets? I'll give an example. Who's a better friend? Somebody you can call up at 2 o'clock in the morning, Rahman al-Salam, I have to take my husband to the hospital, can you please come over? Or somebody you can tell, you know, my husband and I, we need a weekend off. You mind watching our eight kids? Our two kids, you know, I'm just making a little exaggerate. Who's a better friend? Who's a better friend? How many people can you call up that your husband's going to the hospital? I mean, 100 people. Almost anybody you know, my husband is, I need something, I can't leave my kids alone. Right? But if you want to know somebody should watch your kids for 2 days, how many people you can ask? The second year, how many people can you ask? Then the list goes down to zero. What is it, a bigger mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur? Or is it a bigger mitzvah to fast Tzom Gedalia? How many people fast on Yom Kippur? Mostly everybody that has some connection to Judaism. How many people fast Tzom Gedalia? Who's Gedalia? Which means that, therefore, even though one is less important, we would think, and one is more important, the fact that so many less people do it, it means if I do it, it shows I have a much greater commitment. Right? Because nobody else does that. It's the same thing with friendship. The fact that there's a friend that I can ask to do, I can ask 100 people, they might be my best friend, but this itself is not an act that exhibits that much friendship. To watch my children, that's an act that exhibits a great deal of friendship. So one of the ways of measuring what is more important and less important really has a lot to do with how close you are to the person that you do it to. So somebody who fasts Yom Kippur, somebody who goes to a Seder, it's a very important mitzvah. Matzah, Seder, it's a very important, many mitzvahs are done, but a great deal of people do that. There's very few people, I say, like who fast Tzom Gedalia or other mitzvahs. Therefore it could very well be that what looks to you like a big mitzvah, very important, which it is, doesn't exhibit as much connection to Hashem as a rather small mitzvah. But if you're one of the few people who do it, so therefore you may get more reward for doing what you would think is a lesser mitzvah, and it's lesser important. But if you do something which is lesser important, that means you're a better friend. That's what the Mishnah is saying over there. We can't really measure any mitzvah, because the amount of connection there is between man and God doesn't necessarily depend on how important the mitzvah is, but it depends on a lot of other things. How committed do I have to be to do the mitzvah? So if it's something which is a lot of people do, it doesn't exhibit a great deal of commitment. Something that very few people do exhibits a great deal of commitment. And therefore I'll get more reward for doing something that less people do than something more important that a lot of people do. Exactly like with a friend. That's the Mishnah in the second chapter. So now we have a good understanding of that Mishnah. But that's all credit for doing the mitzvah, my relationship with God. What I think with Fum Sara Agra here is there's another reward when you do a mitzvah. And that is, how much are we affected by what we do? How much what we do changes us? How much what a person does has an effect on it? How much depth does a person, how much does charity make me a charitable person? How much I'm giving charity, or how much am I actually becoming a charitable person? That there's a huge difference between doing acts, and that the act should actually transform me to a different level. Not everything I do, I mean, everything I do affects me some way, but what affects me the most? That's what the Mishnah is saying here. Lefum Sara Agra, the more effort you put into something, the more difficult something is, the more it affects you. We're not talking here about the reward in terms of Hashem for the mitzvah. The reward for the mitzvah, we don't know the reward for the mitzvah. There's no way of measuring the reward for the mitzvah. We don't know the relative value of what was done. We don't know how much it necessarily shows commitment when you do it. That we don't know. However, if you want to know how much you are affected by the mitzvahs, the Mishnah is laying that out. How do we know how much we get changed and transformed by doing a mitzvah? That we know from Lefum Sara Agra. The more you invest of your resources, of your time, of your effort, that is what changes a person. A person is changed by how much they put into it. The more you put into something, the more it transforms you. The less you put into it, the less you transform. The reward here we're talking about is not the reward of the mitzvah itself was a mitzvah. We're talking about the reward that you receive from becoming a better person. That's what the Mishnah is saying. And the Mishnah is saying, if you want to know change depends on effort. The more a person invests of themselves, the more time they put into something, the more the thing changes them, the more they become connected to the thing. In fact, the purpose of all creation, the Torah tells us, the Navi says, Adam la'amal yulad, a person was born to work hard. That means he was born to transform himself. And what allows the person to change himself is hard work. And the question is, what is the hard work? So first the Talmud says, well, maybe it means just physical work, because that certainly transforms a person too. Talmud says, no, that's not, brings a sentence, no, that's not the only hard work. The second hard work is amal peh, communication, connecting to people. That's also a great deal of effort. Adam la'amo yulat, a person was created to work hard on building relationships. Talmud says, no, that's not enough either. Not that we're negating that, that remains, but there's a higher level. Amal Adam la'amo yulat is referring to the experience of Torah. The highest value is that you have to work hard, you have to work hard on relationships, and you have to work hard on studying. That is what man was created for, because our whole creation is we should grow, and growth is a function of work. They're very interesting. In this past week's parsha, Rashi says the sentences begin of a whole litany of blessings. Im b'chukosai te'lechu, if you do the mitzvahs. There's a whole litany of brachas. Vim lo si shmui, and if you don't do them, a whole litany of curses. That if you were in the synagogue, the Baal Kori read those curses low, because the whole very horrific things happened. That's what the pasuk says. Rashi explains b'chukosai te'lecho means if you're amal in Torah, if you put hard work into learning, you get blessings. And if you don't work hard, not that you don't learn, but you don't work hard, you get curses. That's the way Rashi reads the sentences. The question is, so it sounds like all the blessings come if you do a lot of, if you work hard and study, and all the curses come if you don't work hard and study. If you read the text itself, the text says like this, the curses are, you're going to be thrown out of the land of Israel for 70 years, because that corresponds to the amount of years that you did not observe the laws of Shemitah. You did not observe the sabbatical year. You know, last year was a Shemitah year. You didn't observe the laws of Shemitah. And by being thrown into exile, then the land of Israel is not worked in the seventh year. And 70 years, we were in Israel 420 years. We didn't keep 70 Shemitahs, not one. And therefore, we were in the diaspora for 70 years, because the earth was recapturing the time it should have been fallow. That's what the text says. So where does Rashi come to say something ridiculous that is, if you don't work hard in learning? The Torah tells us clear that we're thrown into exile is why? Because we did not observe the laws of Shemitah, and we'll be in exile 70 years to recapture the 70 Shemitahs. Every seventh year we're supposed to leave the land fallow, and we didn't do it. It's like unbelievable. The rabbis are giving us like the rest of the story. The Torah tells us the reason we're in the diaspora for 70 years between the destruction of the first and the rebuilding of the second temple is because the land has to be fallow for 70 years. Every seventh year we should have been kept it fallow and we didn't. And therefore that's our punishment. And Rashi gives us a whole different interpretation. Say like this, it's a huge psychological important thing to know. I don't know if anybody heard it this week, explanations why. What does Shemitah mean? You work 6 years, the seventh year you have to leave fallow. So everybody says, what's the purpose of that? We have to get trust in God. Parnassah comes from God. I say that's narishkeit. Literally ridiculous. The reason I say that is because Torah says as follows. What about if somebody asked the question, what am I going to eat during the seventh year? I'm not working. Nobody, I'm not planning, I'm not planting, I'm not plowing, I'm not sowing, I'm not reaping. What am I going to eat? This is the Torah answer. The Chisoyman, if you say, what am I going to eat? God says, no problem. In the sixth year, The year before that, the land is going to produce three crops. So you're going to get enough for the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year. Okay. Please tell me what kind of a tachan that is. And not only that, what does that say about the Jewish people? I mean, it's like the biggest anti-Semite. The Torah says we didn't keep the Shemitah for 70 years. We got paid. You know, that's greed. They say in Wall Street, bulls make money, bears make money, pigs. That's being a pig. You already got paid for it. What do you mean you didn't keep the laws of Shemitah? How could it be the Jewish people did not keep the laws of the sabbatical year? For not one sabbatical year did they observe as a nation in its totality, that God sent us into Golus, exile for 7 years because we did not... We got paid in advance. What kind of people are we? What kind of greed? That's being a pig. You got paid, now you want to work too? The Torah is telling us, and this is really what Shemitah is. We should understand this, what we're saying now. A person needs to work. When it's the seventh year, what... Forget about... Okay, what was my question? What was the question? What are we going to eat? The answer to that question, God gave us the six. What am I going to do is a bigger question. It's the seventh year. What am I going to do? You know, right now the kids are getting crazy with finals. The day after school's out, they're running around, throwing their books away. How long does it take that they start wanting to go back to school? A month? 6 weeks. They want to go back to school. Nobody likes, even children that are really undisciplined, understand, structure this. A person needs to work. You don't feel good if you don't work. What do we do a whole year? Money we don't need. Money we don't need. God paid us in the 6th year. We got plenty of food. What are we supposed to do? The answer is, you know what they did? They didn't have what to do. So the reason they went to work wasn't greed. It wasn't about money. You know what it was about? Work. A person needs to work. There's Adam Ma'amu Yulad. A person needs to work. A person does not feel fulfilled unless he's growing from work. You'll hear many people say, the reason I don't retire, I don't want to be dead in 6 months. That's not a rare occurrence. That a person who doesn't work, doesn't have a reason to live, he doesn't have a reason to get up in the morning, so all the germs that are hosting in his body are going to eventually kill him. You need a desire to live. Adam l'umo yulat, we can't, the reason we didn't observe the laws of Shemitah is because we had nothing to do. Well, that's what the rabbis are saying. If you're umul b'Torah, if you've disciplined yourself to work hard and learning, and now you have a year off that you don't have to work, what are you supposed to do during the 7th year? It's a year of study. God gave Jewish people sabbatical every 7 years so they could seriously study. But if you're not umul b'Torah, if you are not disciplined and not committed to learning, what are you going to do in the 7th year? You have two options. Either you're going to go crazy, and that's very dangerous, and if you do nothing, it's very dead. Or you're going to go to work, and that's what the Jewish people did. So the Torah says the reason we were thrown into exile was because we did not observe the laws of Shemitah. That's why. And I say it wasn't that we were greedy, it's because a healthy, emotional person can't sit around and do nothing. A couple of days. But a whole year to have nothing to do is emotionally devastating to a person. A person needs to feel accomplishment, others are going to a great depression. And therefore, they went to work. It wasn't about money. They got money in the 6th year, they were already paid. It wasn't greed. It was a feeling of emptiness. That was the fact. And therefore the rabbis say, if you're Amel B'Torah, if you are actually disciplined and seriously committed to learning, then you don't have to worry about it. You're only going to get blessings, because in the 7th year you're going to observe the laws of Shemitah. But if you're not, and therefore you're not disciplined and you're not working and learning, you have nothing to do, what you're going to do is go to work. and you're not allowed, and that's what happened. So it's not only not a contradiction between Rashi and the text, the rabbis are actually giving us the whole insight what drove us to work. That it wasn't being driven by greed, by money. We had a chance, we were avaricious, we had a chance to grab some more money. It was because we needed a feeling of fulfillment. And fulfillment is growth, and unless a person is working hard, they don't feel good about themselves. That's a huge problem with people that have inherited a lot of money. It's a huge problem with people that retire, they have nothing to do. I mean, I know some people retire. They buy a motorcycle. I'm talking guys who are 65, buy a motorcycle. You know, for the first, when he comes home with this big Harley Davidson, his wife thinks it's good until she wakes up the next morning and says, I'm going to be a widow. But that's what people do. That's, by the way, I'm just talking about examples in our community already. Or, you know, a nice red sport car that you got to figure out how to get in. They have nothing to do. A person's made enough money. They have nothing to do. They have nothing to do. All you can do is get into trouble. Or you get usually depressed. But the Torah says we have to work. Adam l'amo yulad, we have to work. Why? Because it's only through hard work that a person feels a sense of growth. Rabbeinu Yonah explains in Rashi, there's a pasuk in Mishlei, b'chol etzev te'mosar, hard work is advantageous to a person. Growth, a person needs to work hard. But the Mishnah here is telling us the fum tsara agra is that if we put that hard work into doing mitzvahs, then we grow. This is not describing the reward of the mitzvah. The reward of the mitzvah, the Mishnah tells in the second, nobody knows what the reward for the mitzvah itself is. But what about the reward of our personal growth, that we grow? This is this Mishnah. The fum tsara agra. It requires a huge amount of hard work. With this, now we begin understanding what about Torah and davening over there. We have special things that says work and walking, your mitzvah. I mean, that's by every mitzvah. It's not specially, no. By every mitzvah, hard work goes to what issue? My personal growth. But does it go to make the matzah any better? Is the mitzvah of matzah anymore because I waited an hour? I drove an hour for it? I drove an hour to a mikveh? It doesn't make the mitzvah any better. It makes me a better type of human being. That's what we're saying. That's what this mission is. By davening, which the essence of davening is commitment, then the walking is part of the mitzvah too. It's a better davening too. By all mitzvahs, work doesn't change the quality of the mitzvah. The mitzvah has whatever reward it has, which we don't know. Reward only, work and effort only affects how much I change through what I do. However, by davening, the walking itself is part of the mitzvah too. If you walk to daven for an hour, you have a better davening. Because davening is an act of commitment. And if you made a bigger effort to go, that means you're more committed. Therefore, it was a better davening. That's the reason davening and learning are singled out, that walking is a mitzvah, which we don't find by everything. It can't just be lefum tsara agra, according to my effort, because that's by every mitzvah. Say, no. By every mitzvah, lefum tsara agra means how much I've changed. By learning and davening, the mitzvah is actually enhanced also. Because a mitzvah, that's commitment. The more you put into, that's more commitment. When you're committing yourself to something, the more effort you put in to make the commitment is a greater commitment, and therefore you get there. The mitzvah is also better. Besides the fact that you've changed more, the mitzvah is better too. Now we begin, I say, this is to see if we can now understand the Rambam, and I know it goes against our culture. Today, the view in school is, and the parents say, and they jump on the teachers, that you have to coddle my son or daughter, and you got to be nice to them, and you have to be warm and engaging and loving. Or, I'm not talking about physically hitting a child. But, you know, that was not something unheard of even in the secular state. But the idea of a certain awe for a teacher, that's almost a non-existent reality. I think what it is because we are not interested, in general, in our children changing. Studying in America, let's talk about secular culture. You know, there we can see the shortcoming. Ourselves, you know, we don't have to admit that. This is what other people's problems is. Everybody will decide if it's their problem, too. A secular education today is not about education. It's not about even growing as a human being in understanding. A liberal arts education is worthless. Nobody would even suggest, God forbid, your child is going getting a BA in some type of liberal arts thing. College is one thing, making money. Liberal arts is growth, understanding, get involved in wisdom. You don't send anybody to school for that. Nobody's interested in that. A good school means when I graduate, I get a better job. And maybe I'll go for a master's because that's a better job. A PhD in some type of liberal arts, that's worthless. What you can do if you can find some place to teach, you can maybe, man, there's very few jobs. And so therefore, the whole learning experience has nothing to do with personal growth. It's just a tool to make money. That's in the secular world. Unfortunately, by us too, I don't say that it's a tool to make money. People don't make a lot of money from learning Torah, but it's a tool to, you know, to learn, know our history, know our culture. But how much are we talking about really changing ourselves as human beings? How much are we talking about growing? How much are we talking about looking for more? You know, most of us, religion is also, it's a lifestyle. It's a nice lifestyle. It's a pleasant, there's family life is nice, there's a Friday night meal, there's a Shabbos meal, there's time for people to talk to each other, families to meet together. You know, a lot of the problems of modern society in a observant home, we deal with that. But are we talking about real growth? Are we talking about really people working on changing, growing? We don't think about it ourselves. We're talking about how we act. How we dress, how we look, how we act. We're not talking about what we're trying to become. And if we don't want to become, then learning is just something. Give information, make sure the child will absorb the information, make sure he'll know how to, you know, ask the four questions on Pesach, and make sure he'll know how to say a Dvar Torah at the Shabbos table, and make sure he'll know how to basically observe and act as an observant Jew. And therefore, learning is a very watered-down experience. There's no sense of anything other than make sure that it's enjoyable. He wants to go to school. He enjoys studying. That's not what learning is supposed to be. That's what the Rambam is telling us. Learning is to change it. That's why he said, Lefum Sara Agra, according to my effort, and we're saying that means I change. That's why we've defined the fum. According to the effort you get reward means the amount of change the person undergoes. The Rambam is telling us in the learning experience, the amount of change that a person undergoes is if he learns in an atmosphere where he's in awe of the teacher, he senses that there's a world much greater beyond him, there's human beings that are greater than him, and perhaps he'll be able to open his eyes up, open his mind up to try and reach for growing as a human being. If a person has that perspective, then he will learn and grow. If he doesn't have that perspective, he will not learn and grow. If learning is only cuddling, enjoyable, motivating, but it's not with any sense of awe, then it doesn't become, it's just a learning. I'm learning. I'm enjoying my learning. Enjoying my learning means I'm absorbing information. But change is only to the extent that it's painful, only to the extent that I'm opening myself up and I'm allowing the material to change me. Anything which is just relaxed, laid back, absorbing information does not change the person. I think what we're not open to, all of us, we're not open to, is wanting to, we're not personally willing to change much. We're just trying to act in a certain manner, but we're not really trying to change, and therefore this whole notion of what learning ought to be doesn't exist. The way learning should be, it should be that the students should be in awe of the teacher. They should be feeling extremely inadequate. Not that they can't do the material if they will make an effort, but they have to feel there's a lot for them to grow. Not just they're missing information. They need to open their minds. They need to be able to see that who they are is much less of a human being. They have much less values, less perspective on life, and they should actually feel that they have an inadequacy, and therefore learning will change them. And it's only to the extent that a person learns that way that he's changed. If he doesn't learn that way, he's not changed. We're not living in a culture like that, and we are greatly influenced. Learning today has absolutely, in the secular world, nothing to do with change. Unfortunately, the secular notion of learning has filtered into the Jewish system of learning. And I don't mean just the day schools, I'm talking about the yeshivas too. It's a very laid-back experience. It's all motivate, make sure there's trips, make sure there's all exciting things. There's nothing wrong with that. There's always motivation. But it was motivation combined with awe. Awe means there's a sense of feeling insignificant. And it's being, and parents have exactly the same issue. You know, most of us grew up, your father didn't have to hit you. What did he have to do? Look at you. You have to look at your kid and hit him. And you don't accomplish what your father got with a look. Because we do not relate to them in a way that we are figures of awe, which the Torah, by the way, obligates us to do, because the Torah obligates a Jewish child to be honor his parents and be in awe of his parents. And you're not supposed to be heavy-handed with them, but you have to maintain also a certain distance. We have to be figures of awe. And we're not figures of awe, we're only friendly with our children. We are also affected by secular culture. And when there's no awe, there's no change. When your father looked at you or your mother looked at you and you felt an inadequacy, then you were reaching, you know, maybe I can change myself. But if I don't have that, okay, my father's a very nice, they support me, live in a beautiful house in Miami Beach. That's a nice idea, I'll certainly spend a little time thinking about it. But when you're in awe of somebody, it's not that you spend time thinking about that. You begin with the premise, I don't know. And what they're saying is 100% right. That doesn't mean that you have to be a dummy, and as you get older, I'll rethink it and work it, but I begin with the premise they know what they're talking about, because they know more than me, and they know what they're talking about. And if, after thinking and studying and analyzing, it doesn't work, so I have the right to disagree. But today it's not like that. My father has an opinion, and I have an opinion. My brother has an opinion, and my mother has. So, you know, we have four different opinions in our home. Instead of there's two right opinions and two of us that don't understand. Don't understand doesn't mean I know my parents are wrong, like today. I don't know. I assume they're right, but I don't understand it. And then I will spend time trying to understand. That's a whole different attitude, and a person does not grow. And we are obligated as parents to have our children have to be in awe of us. Now, you can't be heavy-handed, but I'll give a few examples of this. You know, we have a law. The law is you're not supposed to sit in your parents' seat. Well, we do this. We have no problem in America. The parent keeps on changing their seat by all the meals. You know, you got a round table, and, you know, pretty soon the parent doesn't have. My son was 5 years old. We lived in Israel. We had a table about the size of this table. And one day, instead of sitting there, I'm sitting here. So my son, he's not more than five. He says to me, you know, if you sit there, then you don't have a seat. You know, a child is not stupid. I mean, he's a smart boy, but he understood that I was doing a huge mistake. Because once I sit there, then I don't have a seat anymore. It is important that a parent has a seat, because then a child understands they can't sit in the parent's seat. You're doing them a favor. We have to keep up. Our job is to be loving, to be close to them, but we have to maintain a certain sense of awe too, because when someone is in awe of someone else, you listen to them different, you hear what they're saying different, but more than that, you understand that you are incomplete. And if I am incomplete, then what I learn, I'll grow and I'll change. It's for the sake of the child. I'm not saying that a parent has to feel, oh, I need this honor and awe from my child, so I should feel good about myself. It's for the sake of the child. Because if a child thinks that they have an opinion the same as yours, the child will, may agree, might disagree with you, but they're not going to change. Change is the fum sara agra. There has to be a sense of awe. There has to be a sense of pain that I feel actually lacking. If I feel lacking, then I can grow. If I don't feel I'm lacking, there's absolutely no growth.
But most of us, I mean, it's a little late for me, but, you know, not, just in general, that most of us don't even understand what to do. I mean, besides the fact that you, you know, have the respect of not sitting in your parents' chairs, there's probably hundreds of things that we're supposed to do.
Okay, so we can go into something.
It would be a fabulous class for someone.
Okay,
to do.
Okay.
And
okay, that's certainly something.
Because it's...
Elaine, you want to send your kids to the class?
Yes.
No, but 100%. That's 100%.
I think everybody would want
it. I was just giving one example. Another example is, which is certainly, I had a friend who was Orthodox, grew up in an Orthodox house, moved to Israel, you know, the real, you know, modern Orthodox. Until his Rebbe said that you're not allowed to call your father Frank, or whatever his father's name was, he called him by his first name, like all his other American friends. That's another example. You can't call your parent by their name. Nobody would have thought of that. Would you have thought growing up that you're going to call your father by his name? But in America, because we are not all figure, but you understand the one we're hurting is the child. That's what the Rambam is telling us here. In order for, we're saying lefum sara agra means change requires that the person who's going to help change, he's an awe figure by you. And if he's not, if he does not inspire awe in you, you're not going to change. That's what the Rambam is telling us. And therefore as parents, and by the way, it's never too late. As long as you still help to support the kids. When they start supporting you, then it becomes a problem. But that's as long as, you know, I'm joking, but as long as, you know, thank God you're healthy and you don't, and you're independent, the children will only benefit from maintaining a certain dignity. That doesn't mean you love them any less, but there's certain boundaries. That's not for your sake. It's for their sake, because otherwise they're not going to learn from your life experiences either. And they're not going to change from, okay, that's my mother's old-fashioned way of doing it, but we have a different way. It's we the only way a person changes is from somebody else is if the person feels inadequate in their, unworthy in their presence. And then, again, that doesn't mean that after thinking it through and spending years and analyzing it, you always have to agree with your parents or your Rebbe, but we're talking the starting point. But the difference is that when you feel awe, you are changing when you're studying. And the Mishnah is telling us life is all about changing. And so I say that's what it means, Adam l'amo yulad. We were created to change and grow. And the only way a person changes and grow is through a great deal of hard work, pain, and effort. And I should have a great job.